This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Grip Lock, Foundation Disc Golf Weekly Podcast. I'm Hunter, joined as always by Trevor and Connor.
What up?
Quite the show today. A lot of stuff went down at Waco. It was wacko, as it always seems to be. We'll have a Patreon question of the week, a little Manufacturer Cup update, and then Trevor's trivia, all the typical stuff. But before we get into all of that, quick shout out to the sponsor of today's video. Top of the morning to you. This episode is brought to you by the St. Paddy's Day Shamrock Shavers Manscaped. Let your confidence shine bright this year with Manscaped's Lawnmower 5.0 and embrace the luck of the Irish by joining the 10 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped. Head over to manscaped.com and use code GRIPLOCK for 20% off and free shipping. Ever since I've used Manscaped, I can proudly say I found my pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. You can meet your new lucky charm for St. Paddy's Day, the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra. It comes with two interchangeable next-gen skin-safe blade heads, one for a classic trim and a new foil blade to go smooth wherever your heart desires. Complete your look with Manscaped Signature Beard Hedger Pro Kit and Handyman Electric Face Shaver. Whether you're sculpting your beard or cleaning up your neckline, these things always are the right tool for the job. Don't forget, you can get 20% off and free shipping with code GRIPLOCKED over at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with code one word, GRIPLOCKED, at manscaped.com.
I really should learn the ASL to the Manscaped reads. I think it would be fun.
It could be something.
And that would be fun.
because our... Yep. Patreon question of the week. I was trying to think.
Good stop.
I was thinking of something with audio listeners. I was like, that has nothing to do. It's purely visual. And so I just ignored it
good
and kept
stop.
Going. Patreon question of the week. If you don't know where this comes from, it comes from patreon.com/foundationdiscgolf.
Guys, did we talk about Katrina Allen having a baby at any point in this podcast?
No. I'm blocked. I couldn't see it.
Okay.
She's having a baby?
Yeah.
I have my accounts. Yeah.
Yeah.
Her and Austin Hannum.
She's having a kid.
She's
in July.
Yeah, mid-season.
Wow.
Mid-season. What?
When in July?
I don't know.
The same day as your baby.
No due. Way.
Yeah.
You and, when is Yuli's baby Jr. due?
June. Or maybe it's either like a month before or after yours.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Not quite. I know. The trifecta. Like three incredible disc golfers at the same time.
You made me full on chuckle on that one, Drake.
You're better than Kat right now.
Thanks, man. That's one of the Waco
I'm not
story
sure
lines.
About that.
Actually, probably not a Waco storyline.
I think that she'd be able to conquest one of the courses that we try to conquest.
We did have, so course conquest, if you haven't seen it, Connor and I went out and we got...
Who's ready for next month?
This month. You
nobody
be.
Is. Nobody's happy
we
about
had,
it.
Someone came in the store today.
I read the comments. They're rough.
Someone came in the store on like Friday and they had driven from Michigan just to play our courses. And one of them, they were like, I have to go see his Heritage. And he showed up. He's talking to Connor and I, who just played alt shot and shot 10 over through 9 holes out there. And he's like, yeah, I went even par. It was not as hard as I expected it to be.
No,
like,
it's
no.
not.
I was like, no, yeah, we try to make that clear. That we
get,
thing is
we get just mad cow disease every time we show up.
if you hit a tree off your drive,
you make
you just,
bogey.
You suck. Yeah. It's so hard.
Yeah, but if you pure the drive, you're going to be just fine.
Yeah.
Like par is not.
Yeah, that's what, like whenever it. You throw a decent tee shot, it looks like, wow, this is easy.
Like par
but
is
it's hard,
not
yeah.
hard. All but like one hole, par is not hard on.
Mm-hmm. I disagree with that statement.
Maybe two holes.
That par three that drops off the face of the earth, that's a tough par. And the last hole is a very tough par.
The two I had in my head were the last hole and the first hole for us.
The first but, hole is kind of a tough bar.
Yeah,
what are you talking about? We
par.
Did great on the first
we
hole.
We did. Connor and I annihilated
that
it.
Was the best part of the video.
But the rest of them, I mean, the rest of them, like, you put a drive in the fairway.
I think we need to, like, maybe we just have to put it on a line and be like, if we don't get it this month, we just cancel the series.
I think we might have to put the pressure on.
Put the pressure on.
I mean, this is our fifth attempt.
It's disgusting.
Some people have
said that what you need to do is you need to do a video where, like, you just can't leave until you win.
Oh, we can't leave. We can't.
Like, maybe we just keep playing Heritage until we get a score that we know we can beat it at Lynchburg College. Maybe.
But I mean, the closest we came, we went 6 over at Heritage and went 8 under at Lynchburg College.
I mean, that sounds miserable for me to have to watch you guys just play Heritage for that. I mean, I love you guys so much.
I think maybe
it
that's
is unmatched how much I love you.
Maybe that's unrelated. The course conquest rules. Like, if we get to a take five, which we're at
take five
right now, if we get to take five, we can't leave the course till we beat it.
Maybe. Yeah, we'll just play. Like, I'm down 48 for holes.
We're not gonna lose it. We're not gonna lose it again.
Well, no, I can't see us losing again. Personally,
I can't either. Like, I think
it's gonna be like 70 degrees this week.
Yeah, like we're gonna show out up there, loose arm,
loosey goosey, baby.
We do need to kind of do it this month because everything's coming into bloom, and you don't want to be on either of those courses. And when
no,
it's
that oh my gosh, good
next
point.
Month both of those courses are going to suck.
And
it's going to be real bad.
Falsetto.
Yeah, thank you. Hit him with falsetto in 3, 2. So anyways, Patreon question of the week comes from Heiser Club Mailbag, our weekly Q&A podcast. You can join it at patreon.com/foundationdiscgolf. I felt bad for all of you Heiser Club members because everyone thought you were back. Everyone thought you were there.
Suckers!
So half the questions were specifically directed to you.
I've been
there.
That
we just had to skip. Well, and be like, he'll be back next week, guys. So one of these, though, they made us do a snake draft for this, which was not as fun with just two people.
Yeah, a snake draft with two people is just
so
stupid.
Yeah. I brought it back here so that we could
it's
have
a snail draft.
Yeah, quick, fun hypothetical. You have to draft a doubles team for an upcoming pro best shot tournament. Tournament will be two rounds, round one at Maple Hill, round two at Idlewild. So do a fantasy draft. Youngest person picks first, snake draft. So the last person in round one's first pick in round two. Two picks in a row for them. We know how snake draft works. Who's your MPO team and who's your FPO team? This is from Kyle B. So it'll go Trevor, Connor, me.
So I can take either an FPO or an MPO player to start?
Yeah.
Like we're building both teams at the same time? Yeah. Okay. Well, in that case, FPO is going to be a heck of a lot more important. So yeah, I got Kristen Tatar with the number one pick.
I got to go first on that one last time.
I was like, I can take a combination of like 50 MPO players have a fighting chance, but I'll take Kristen Tatar. Thank you very much.
I'm going to go Marweed for the putt game.
Interesting.
My doubles MPO is pretty dope. So like I would just,
so round one, Maple Hill, round two is Idlewild. So I'm going with,
come on, dog.
All right, I'll go Simon Lazat, Maple Hill. Okay. He'll shred it. And then give me Evelina Solonen. Because in doubles, maybe the pressure's off her putt.
Heck yeah, dog.
Mm. Connor?
What's up?
I'm going with the Goose Man for my other. Goose Man, Marweed, sick team.
That's
because,
a team.
Because Aaron Gossage is really good. But he's not as good at putting.
He's not good at all, I would say.
Go ahead, Trevor.
I'm going to take Missy Gannon. What a goated doubles team that is.
Missy Cannon.
And then I'm going to take, for an MPO player, I'm going to go ahead and have Mr. Calvin Heimberg.
Nice.
Who is amazing.
I'm going to take Haley King for the crushy arm.
And then I will take Henna Blom-Roos for the chemistry out there.
Of course.
And Kyle Klein for Idlewild.
It's interesting, though, that like now you have two people that can't putt on a doubles team.
But neither of them will have pressure on their putt.
Yes, they will.
No. It works for
us. One of them will.
When we do whenever the first person misses. When we do a bug hero battle, we're such good putters.
Oh, yes. I remember now.
Yes.
Yeah, that is a good
point. It's been so long.
That's how we've never lost one of these
Yeah,
things.
It's been so long.
We just don't miss putt.
I forgot we're insane undefeated. At putting.
Yeah. My last and final pick is to get owned.
Wait, who is the second MPO guy
that
you
is
took?
Owned Scoggins.
Cal Klein.
Okay, I'll take Isaac Robinson.
I felt like you didn't really care about my pick, Trevor. I'm
you
not
said get
lie.
Owned.
Yeah, but it felt like you moved on like while I was still talking.
I didn't want to
own.
It felt like you were kind of like throwing a.
Well, I couldn't take another FPO player.
Over Connor's yeah, chair in the back there.
Yeah, I'll just like I just didn't feel
covering
valued.
Him up.
I guess I like I'm not mad at you. I just want you to know how I feel. I didn't feel valued. Mm. Get owned.
Waco.
Who was your last
Tatar
pick? I
wasn't took
paying
it down. Kristen Tatar took it down. Own Scoggins.
Bogey Smith.
Oh, okay.
Own Scoggins. Connor's pick.
What up?
For his doubles team came in second. Holland Hanley came in third, and then on MPO we had Gannon Burr taking it down. Niklas Antola coming in second, as well as Luke Humphreys also coming in second. Let's look at FPO here first. Kristen Tatar picks up right where she left off.
Nice.
Let me just, if you didn't watch this tournament this weekend, or at least the FPO, Kristen Tatar, after round two, 6 strokes back of the lead. Okay.
Was it that much?
It was. I double checked it this morning. Kristen Tatar, after round three.
Which is like not even a big deal.
6 strokes back after round two. Okay. But you were still thinking, 3 strokes around, she'll chip away, she's going to be just fine.
Ball game.
She then had a 5-stroke lead after round 3. She chipped away 11 strokes one round.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
That's not a chip.
Ended up winning by 7.
That was TNT.
Yeah.
Now, Yeah, she won by 7 when it was all said and done. So 13 stroke turnaround in 2 rounds. If it was a 2 round tournament, she would have won by 13 is how that math works.
She's so good.
Probably not actually, but anyways.
Good job, huh?
If you look at her stats, she only led the field in strokes gained tee to green. Like she just you always try to look at it.
One.
Yeah, but like fairway hits, circle one in regulation, circle one putting, circle two, like all of it she was behind people in. Everything else. Like there are people
FPO.
Who have higher birdie rates than her, higher like
tee to green FPO is like
it is a crucial one.
It's really tee to
green.
But she
only putted 69%.
C1X?
Yeah.
Well, C1X no more. Is C1X still exists?
It is still
exists?
C1X, yeah.
Okay.
It is still C1X.
I couldn't remember.
But anyways, she just doesn't, there's no
that's
like.
That's kind of trash.
There's no like, this is why, like when Owen Scoggins wins, it's like, well, her putter. Like no one can out putt Owen.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like Kristen doesn't have that stat. It really comes down to, in correlation to the rest of the field, she just doesn't make bogeys.
She's balanced, man.
Like she gets birdies at a good rate, but there's people who birdie more than her. It's just the people who birdie more than her bogey a lot more than her.
Yeah.
Like she's
there's plenty of FPO players that birdie more. She just doesn't implode.
Yeah. It's like
FPO players implode when they get the lead.
It's well, yeah. So we'll talk about Ella Hansen in a second here. She's gonna have nightmares about this.
And
but
so do MPO players sometimes, but it's just like there are some players that whew.
What I think I was trying to put it into words because my wife and I were watching FPO on the final day. And what I think makes FPO frustrating to watch sometimes is that Kristen doesn't do anything flashy. Like, it's not like her dominance
is
because she is like, oh, well, of course, it's because she throws so much farther. She putts so much better. It's like everyone who is on the lead card, I've seen them do every shot Kristen does, basically.
Yeah.
It's just she doesn't mess up. Like, she's just consistent. So it's not like, I don't know. It's just a...
No,
it's
weird.
Interesting thing.
You're right, because like...
Like, everyone's capable
people,
in the field of doing what Kristen does.
People describe,
she just doesn't mess it up.
People describe what she's doing, which I think is accurate, as like the Tiger Woods effect, where she just is beating everybody up.
Yeah.
But the difference is, when Tiger Woods was doing that, he was doing it with the wow factor shots that at the time nobody else could do. Like, you would see him hit a shot that nobody else in the world could hit. And that was like how he was doing it. When you watch Kristen do it, it's just like... Yeah, she's just playing good and not doing dumb things, and the rest of the field around her is just like blowing themselves up, like just doing just the making the craziest mistakes.
It was very unfortunate timing.
That's
but,
what happens.
But this was the timing of when I said that to Liz. I was like, you know, I think what it is this. And as I said that, Ella Hansen threw it into the Zuka cart triple mando, just like into the side of it, and I was like. See?
Dude, if I had to, I don't know,
I'm
man.
Not making, that's the other thing I
if
told
If I
Liz,
had to stare at Paul Ulibarri all that time, I'd get a little distracted too.
I told Liz, I was like,
good point,
to
Trev.
Be fair, like, I'm not making that triple mando, but I'm not a professional disc golfer.
I'm glad you're being fair.
Yeah.
Yeah, he is fair.
But like, I think that's hunts. What you watch, like when I watch it, like, it's not that any of, like, that's the frustrating part is they're all good at disc golf. Like, they all have, like, again, it'd be one thing if it's like, Kristen Tatar is just throwing 550 and they're playing long courses, and everyone else is throwing 350. It's like she just can't compete. No one can compete. But it's like,
it's got to be.
People
it's just
throw farther than her. People are better forehand players than her. People are better backhand players than her. People are better putters than her. It's just no one's better than her.
She's just the most consistent.
She's just good. And you know, that's not taking anything away from Kristen, because everyone has the same opportunity to show up and be that consistent, and no one's doing it but her.
That's how.
But like, you watch this weekend, she might not lose this year.
Yeah, it's going to be another year like last year. And it must be frustrating to be a competitor, and like, you just really can't quite put your finger on it. And like, I don't doubt that a lot of the FPO field works really hard in the off season. Like, everybody talks about Kristen's work ethic and like how seriously she takes disc golf, and I think that's a huge part of her success. Obviously, she's just naturally gifted too. But I think that there are a lot of FPO players that work really hard in the off season, and they just can't catch up.
Well, I think part of it too is the mental side.
Oh yeah. No, yeah. I mean, I think, well, and when you get a chokehold on the rest of the field the way she has, everybody shows up thinking, a lot of players probably show up thinking we're playing for second. You end up on Kristen's card and you're probably just sitting there waiting for the inevitable. Even if you're not actively thinking that, it's got to be in the back of your mind. Like that, a lot of people, talking back to the Tiger Woods thing, a lot of people will say that was a huge part of his success, was his intimidation factor was so heavy that as long as he could get in that leading position or near it, everybody around him would start to crumble because they were so intimidated. And I can imagine, like, you show up and you know you got to beat Kristen when she wins all the time.
Like, that's tough to deal with, you know? And it's that's why you see stuff snowball, because then, you know, it all adds up and you're like, oh my gosh, here we go again. Yeah, I think Kristen Tatar is going to win like half or more, probably more than half the events this year.
Yeah, well, what you just said is how, like, I think that's the biggest factor is like, someone will get a lead, right? And Kristen's on their card or they're checking live scoring or whatever. And they'll just see Kristen take one stroke.
Yeah.
Like, and then it's like almost a fear factor kicks in where it's like, you're completely fine. You still have five on her. You're fine. But then the next thing you know, boom, there goes the second stroke.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just like, they start making mistakes that are just uncharacteristic almost because it's Kristen. And they know, it's almost like they know Kristen's not going to make a mistake. So they feel extra pressure on the mistake.
There's also a certain amount of power when you're Kristen Tatar and you've seen over and over again the top of the field crumble and let you take a win. You can play your game sitting six strokes back going into the last two rounds, knowing that, hey, if I just play my game, there's a great chance that everybody else folds away. Like that's a huge advantage. Like there are some fields. I mean, you're in the MPO field a lot of times these days. You get caught back, you're thinking, I better go out there and shoot a world number.
Even if you have a six-stroke lead, you're thinking, I still need to probably shoot a course record.
Like that's but with Kristen, she's sitting back there, she's just thinking, yeah, I'm just going to keep playing my game, and there's a really good chance that coming into the last few holes of this tournament, I'm going to have a lead or have a chance to win, and that's just what keeps happening.
Now, what is exciting? It's exciting to watch Kristen play in general, because I love watching dominance. I think it pushes the field forward, it pushes the sport forward. It's similar, like we saw Ken Climo had it, and then Paul McBeth had it in MPO, and it got the field to as deep as it is today.
I think Kristen Tatar needs her own plastic.
Kristen Tatar, yeah.
KT Pro.
Oh, a KT Pro Pure? You know what? If they come out with a KT Pro Pure, I know this is going to upset a lot of people.
Uh-oh.
If they come out with a KT Pro Pure,
you can't switch.
I'll switch from the banger. I'll do it. No, I know the whole audience loves watching me play with bangers, but hey.
No, dude, the banger club will not allow that.
No, I would never. I would never switch from it. I can't. You know, I committed. I'm here.
You love it.
But the watching dominance, I think it does like push the sport forward. And I know sometimes it can get boring on like Sunday's round at a certain point. Everyone was just fighting for second. But it's still exciting.
It gives you
something
to pay attention
to. Yeah. And it gives you someone to either root really hard for or root really hard against. But what you have here is a chance at history because she could go back to be the first player ever in disc golf, probably ever in a lot of sports, to go back-to-back Grand Slams.
Very realistically. I really do think that in not just women's sports, I think we see this effect in women's sports a lot, but in any sport, a good way to get it on people's radar is an era of dominance. If I want to use a women's sport example, Caitlin Clark in women's basketball is a really good example right now. Just been phenomenal and drawn so much attention to that sport. And then once the sport is on your radar, then you're going to care more about parity and the competition. But to get a sport on your radar or just like a division, maybe if you just don't watch FPO, that dominance can be good to have because it's like, oh, everybody's talking about this Kristen Tatar who wins everything. Let me see what this is all about. And that can a lot of times bring people in and then they get a little more invested. And then they either might love Kristen or hate Kristen or whatever. And I think that just pushes the sport forward because, you know, that's kind of how it was with Paul and Rick. Like, those guys were dominant, and that kind of brings that pushes the sport forward, like you were saying. And then once they're there, then I think they tune in more.
Oh, yeah. It's similar to, I mean, we've seen it in pretty much every sport. You had the Golden State Warriors.
You had
the New England Patriots. Now you have the Chiefs, Tiger Woods.
It gets people paying attention.
Yeah, like, you tune in when you see, because, like, Whether you loved the Patriots or you hated the Patriots, you're watching them.
Yeah.
Same, like, it's just how it works a lot of times. So I'm all about it. Unfortunately, we do have to talk about Ella Hansen. She had to basically relive all of her Waco nightmares from last year in round three. She was at 15 under through two rounds. Okay. Kristen Tatar won again. She won by 7 with a score of 20 under par.
Mm-hmm.
So Ella Hansen went 7 under, 8 under. I forget exactly, but she's at 15 under through two rounds. She only had to go 5 under more through the next two rounds to tie for the win. Obviously, Kristen was cruising on the way home, so who knows what it would have been. But had she just went even for her last two rounds, she would have come in solo second. Instead, she fell back to a tie for 6th, 12 strokes back of the lead. But the big storyline was she lost 11 strokes to Kristen round 3. at the Beast yet again.
That's crazy.
It wasn't the same as last year. She did struggle on the final stretch, but I think she only lost 3 strokes in the last 3 holes. I don't remember exactly what it was last year when she fell apart and Kristen took it. But it was a similar storyline where Ella Hansen's in control. She's kind of in the driver's seat, especially, you know, she'd played good at both courses. Finishing at Lake Waco felt like, hey, this is leaning towards Ella Hansen's favor. And it crumbled.
It's tough. And correct me if I'm wrong. Is she still yet to win a full pro tour?
I do believe that is correct. I can double check that.
I can't remember if she's won a silver, but...
Well, she might have won a silver.
Yeah.
I don't count that,
but,
though.
But yeah, I'm just saying, like, whenever you're a player that's trying to get over the hump, and I'll let you look that up to make sure this statement actually makes sense. But if that is the case, because I don't remember her winning a full pro tour.
She won a silver at the Discmania Open.
Yeah. So in any case, and that was in Canada where like nobody was.
Was that in Canada?
Or that was the one before Worlds or right after Worlds.
It was. She beat Deanne Carey, Juliana Korver.
Yeah.
But people I haven't heard
of. So in any case, whenever you're trying to win that first like full event, that full pro tour, and you're trying to get over that hump, it is really difficult because you can get a lead like that, and especially in her case, because she had this history of last season, you know, kind of giving that up. But she's a really talented player. She has a lot of shots. When her putt is on, it's effective and it's really good. But yeah, you're trying to get over that hump, it can be very difficult. Like Anthony Barella is a classic example. He finally just got over the hump after some huge, like he had so many opportunities to win. And the hardest thing to do in disc golf is win, right? Like it is not really a tangible skill set. We'll talk about Gannon later, but like talk about a guy who has the ability to win events. You know, that there is a lot of players who can throw all the shots, but when it comes time to close out tournaments, that is something that only certain players can do. And you really only can learn it by accomplishing it. And right now, Ella Hansen just hasn't been able to do that. And I think once she can, that'll be a huge help for her career moving forward, like it would for anybody. But, you know, it's just really hard getting that first one, especially when you're dealing with the most dominant FPO player we've ever seen at the moment. That doesn't make it a very friendly environment for such an achievement.
Yeah. Now, I think Kristen, I think on the broadcast they said for Kristen to break history and be the first ever 1,000-rated FPO player, she needed to average, I think it was 10-13 this weekend. I believe she averaged like 10-10 or something. She went 1,000, 999, 10-31, 999.
What is she at right now, 998?
She's 998 right now. She's probably going to get 999.
Again.
But let's see.
It's rigged.
1,000 plus
big
999.
Big PGA doesn't want it.
But, I mean, we're in March, so there's a lot of other tournaments going on this month. Yeah, she averaged 1,007 this tournament. So, who knows? That's just another semi-storyline of, like, another piece of history that Kristen Tatar could break. Now, MPO's got me fired up this year. This field is so freaking talented that going into the weekend, it's near impossible to predict who's going to be where.
I was looking at the leaderboard with, like, I mean, when Gannon and the leaders were through like 5 holes, I was staring at the leaderboard like, how can I even keep track of all of this? There's like 8 guys at 30 under. It's insane. Like, it is so deep. There is so many twists and turns. You see guys every single week just launching themselves from cards a few back. We see leaders, you know, crumbling under the pressure and then regaining ground and going back and forth. It's insane.
Yeah. So, I mean, first off, you had Nate Sexton on lead card, Greg Barsby top of chase card, yeah. Luke Humphries
what
tied for lead,
this?
Big Jerm yeah. and Yuli tied for 10th.
What year is this?
Going into the final day.
Dude.
So you had like...
I don't want to take too much credit because I kind of just pulled it out of my butt, but I did name drop Sexton and Kolling in the preview show as like, I don't know, maybe. And like I said, there was not a lot of fact behind that, but they both played well.
They both
so
came
I'm
up.
Take
they both showed up. So the vets came to play. Dude. Now,
did you take your Sexton and Big Jerm rock out of your bag? Is that why that
happened?
That
is true.
Yeah.
Now, I'm going to walk you through kind of some of the final round in case you didn't watch. So early in the final round, AB fires off an 11 under from like the third card, take the momentary lead. You kind of knew it wouldn't hold, but at least put pressure on a lot of people.
Yeah, he had a chance to shoot like 13 or 14.
Yeah, he did. As the round goes on, Niklas was the one who got hot from chase card. He ended up also going 11 under, but he was sitting in the clubhouse at 36 under while the lead card still had a few holes to play.
And that was with a crucial bogey on 17.
Yeah. So hole 16 comes. Luke Humphries cashes an absolute huge putt to tie Niklas for the lead and was one clear of Gannon. So he was at 36. Gannon was at 35 under. Hole 17, the lead card star framed from all over the place. It was crazy to watch that putting performance. So that gave Luke the outright lead at 37, and Gannon and Nicklaus Antola were tied at 36 going into 18. So a lot of different playoff scenarios were in play coming into 18. Both threw good drives. We'll call them good drives result-wise, because I think Luke pulled it about 20 feet off his line. But hey, he peered it through that tree gap. And then on the approach shot, I saw some people critiquing Luke for going for the green. How I perceived it was he was trying to lay up.
I also perceived it that way.
Based on the whole...
I don't think he was going for the
green. Yeah, it looked like he was trying to lay up to like 100 feet short, so he could just have an easy up and down.
I think he had adrenaline going and he pumped it.
Yeah.
Because he landed, he didn't land on the back of the green. He landed like middle of the green and skipped kind of towards the back. So I think he was trying to leave it short of the green.
That's what I thought. That's how I perceived it.
He was out of position. They said Gannon was 460 feet back.
Yeah.
Which means that Luke Humphries was even further.
And he threw
and
a hyzer.
He had a lead and he threw a hyzer. There's no way that he was trying to go for it.
So unfortunately, he ends up, and it had a good shot to roll off the green, but it was one of those just curled up and stayed OB. Yeah. So he ended up going OB, meaning Gannon, if Gannon gets up and down for par, he, Nicklaus, and Luke got up and down for bogey, it'd be a three-way tie for the win for a playoff. It all was on Gannon's shoes, like you said, 460 feet, crushes his anti-flex up over the trees, over the tree. It might have been a flex.
It was kind of just flat.
It was kind of, he just crushed a shot up over the trees. And he kept was like, I love the hop mic because you can just hear Gannon like, get over it, get over it, get over it. And then you watched it sail over
it. Electric.
Crashes into the tree, skips like 20 feet deep of the hole. And he had a 20-foot putt for the win. Banged it. Luke gave it a good run from like 150 feet out or so. He gave a good like little nose-up floaty bid. Didn't go in, though. So Gannon hits it for his first win of the year. First win with Discmania. I think he actually on his putt down with... I think he putts with links now.
Yeah, he's putting the link.
PA3 or links. I think on the putt down, he said, this is for Connor Kennedy in his face as he threw a new Discmania disc in for the win.
Yeah, that's sick. I'm glad he's putting with the link.
Yeah, I'm almost positive I heard it. The hot mic was a little iffy, but I think that's what he was saying. And his like last thought was like, ah, screw you, Connor Kennedy, as he threw it. So I don't know. Like, the hot mic was a little iffy there, but the rest of it was sick.
Yeah, that's fine. I love that joke.
Gannon, though, very impressive final round composure. There was a moment in the middle, I think it was round hole 12-ish, things got a little rocky and could have fallen apart.
Yeah, the beginning of his round was going really well, and he was in complete control because though Nicklaus was playing very hot, it was kind of like he's not going to really be able to do enough because Gannon has too many holes in hand. You know, it's not going to happen. But then it starts with him getting a time warning. Okay. That's like when it first gets into his head. He gets a time warning. Then he gets a dead center spit out right as Nicklaus makes birdie by hitting a spectator fence. His disc was skipping like 100 feet OB, hits a spectator fence and bounces back in and then cashes a birdie putt. So you get that ridiculous swing. And then Gannon leaves an upshot wide left that doesn't get any play to go in. Like it seems like everything is going wrong in his round. He can't hit a line. He's getting so shaken up while Nicklaus is just firing away. The fact that he was able to climb back in and really... that all came down to him making an insanely clutch putt on 17 that he had to make at that point. And then 18, that upshot
wild
was crazy because when he threw his drive off the tee, I was kind of like, he's a great flex shot player. They were like 460 feet away. I was like, why didn't he go aggressive there? But I was like, I mean, he's played the hole enough times. Like, he knows he has to birdie. And when he threw that line, you know, Gannon throws far, but he's not like a crusher by any means. And when he threw it as high as he did, I was like, oh my goodness, like, is that going to get there? And sure enough, that thing lands and skips right past the basket. Like, that was a mush. That upshot was absolutely disgusting. It was super clutch. Like, I've said it so many times, like, there are certain players who will start to crumble like that. There's a hot round, like Nicklaus is just absolutely going off, and they're just going to fall apart. The fact that he was able to do so late in that round, I mean, at just some point you were like, he's got to stop the bleeding. And hole after hole after hole, he was just like bogeys and pars and just couldn't get anything going. He was throwing good drives and messing up upshots. Like, everything was going wrong. And so late in the round, literally on hole 17, he's able to make a putt and then make birdie again on 18 to like end up making the win. That's something that a lot of players can't do. It's really hard to lose a lead like that when you were in command. Like, it was his tournament to win. Mm-hmm. And that's what's so impressive about Gannon Burt. And he's so young and he was able to do that. He's just got all the shots. phenomenal putter. Like, he's still a guy where when he gets into that like 40 to 50 foot range, you're like, you just know he's going to make it if he has to. Nicklaus played awesome golf, but man, Gannon Burr, he is just going
to. Gannon is also, his game is just really entertaining to watch too.
Yeah.
Just the way that he throws and the shots he throws.
He takes unique lines just because of the way he likes to throw those overstable discs. It's always exciting, but man, yeah, he is just something special.
Yeah. And so it was 9 through hole 13 was kind of that stretch. He went even because he had one birdie on 10 on the par 5 and then one bogey on 12 on the par 4. He went even through that stretch, which doesn't sound that detrimental, but if you look at everyone around him, they're, I mean, freaking AB went 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 under through those five. He had an ace.
A sick ace.
But like everyone else was getting like 4 out of 5 through that stretch or so. So going even, he was losing a lot of strokes to the field during that stretch.
Guys were scoring.
But then he came back and birdied 4 of the last 5 to close. So he came back on 14 birdie, 15 birdie, 16, very tough birdie to get realistically. I know Nicklaus, AB, and Luke got it, but like not a lot of the field was getting that thing. There was a lot more bogeys than birdies
tight.
We had.
Well,
so
Luke had to play it super aggressive to land where he did. A lot of people were just trying to bail left.
And he still hit a circle's edge putt outside.
It was right
putt.
Outside. It was outside.
Very clutch putt.
It was sweet. Yeah.
When Luke hit that putt,
I thought he was going to win.
I thought he won.
Yeah.
And then he had a nervy hole 17 putt. It was like 15 feet uphill.
Yeah.
Wasn't nervy for him.
Drained
dead
it,
center.
Yeah.
I was like,
that was clutch.
It's over.
Right after Gannon made that putt.
Yeah.
Hole 17 was actually sick. Hole 18 was fine.
Hole 18 was.
I liked hole 18 because it was a challenging upshot. So I think it was still good. Hole 17 was really good. Like hole 17 was it was really cool. Like it looked awesome from the tee. It was intimidating. You had like a tough island to stick. There was a lot of, I really enjoyed that course in general. I thought it was fun to watch, and I actually thought 17 and 18, are they as good as the Beast 17-18? Probably not. Like those are just, the Beast has
18s. I think, hear me out here. Okay. I think this hole 18's better.
It just doesn't look as nice.
It just doesn't look as nice.
I would agree with you. I think it played out really well. But yeah, the looks, like it's very iconic at the Beast. But yeah, I thought it was really, really cool the way it ended. And there was just like, just the way that tournament played out just proves how well it was designed, because you could have a player like Gannon who was struggling at the same time when a player like Nicklaus who was shredding, but you could tell the shots Nicklaus was throwing, like they were amazing shots.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a challenging course. I mean, there were guys that struggled a ton out there.
Well, yeah. So hole 18, because I saw some critiques on it as a finishing hole. To put it into perspective, only Adam Hammes and Gannon Burr birdied it out of the top 15. No one else birdied it.
Yeah, it was hard.
And James Conrad, Ezra Robinson, Mason Ford, and Luke Humphreys all bogeyed it.
Yeah,
so
it was tough.
There was a lot of pars we had,
long.
But it was like, it was a long uphill, very tricky approach shot, but it could be done as Gannon proved to win. So like, I mean, it's hard to critique a hole 18 when it plays out with a two-stroke swing for someone to win.
Yeah.
It's like kind of hard to critique a hole that's capable
it's
of producing.
Really, yeah, and yeah, you can, I understand like you wanting it to be more scenic. Typically, the hole 17s are the more scenic one anyways. Like the point of a hole 18 a lot of times in golf is less about how scenic it is and more about, yeah, you want to be able to accommodate spectators for sure, but just having separation opportunity, that's what's important. So I think having a par 4 or 5 for hole 18 is good. I think this one was great because you had options on both shots. You were going to have a choice on the tee, aggressive or safe, and then you're going to have a choice on the upshot. And it gave us a scenario where Gannon technically had a choice. Like, he didn't have to go for it. You know, he could have laid up, but
he
decided to throw the hero shot and put it into his own hands and won with that shot. And he could have gone for that shot, landed OB, and we're back in a different place. So.
Yeah, because where he was at, had he laid up and then, you know, taking his par, it would have been a three-way playoff.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like the layup doesn't lose him the tournament.
Yeah.
The layup is, I think I can win in a playoff.
And, like,
but
I would,
he decided taking it in his own
and
hands.
And 16, 17, 18, which would have been the playoff rotation, would have been a sick playoff.
Yeah, it would have been
challenging holes right there.
Because in my head, when he threw his tee shot, I think that he, because the commentary team, like you had said, was kind of surprised that he didn't go more aggressive. How I perceived it was, he saw Luke shot and he wanted to be in the driver's seat somewhat. So he just wanted to play chess to where Gannon was trying to put himself in a position where he could go for it. If Luke was getting up and down for par, he could go for it, or he could lay up for par if he was in a spot where Luke bogeyed. He gave him decisions.
No, it's valid.
If he went aggressive and messed up the tee shot,
yeah,
he doesn't have decisions.
Yeah, no, that's valid. And obviously he knew getting to the top of the hill, which was a pretty easy shot to throw, he obviously had the arm to get there. I thought it was really funny him checking the broadcast to see where he landed as he's walking
up. Yeah, people were upset about that.
Why would you be upset about that?
I don't know. I saw people like tweeting at us like, what are your thoughts on this?
Okay. I guess I will say
this. It looks weird, but if you're not going to, like, if you're not going to ban phones.
Yeah. I'd say then technically, yes. Knowing where competitor shots are before you can see them would be an advantage, except it's not because everybody can do it.
They all have access to
exactly.
It,
yeah. If they are going to ban phones, which at this point they can't do because you don't have a leaderboard like everywhere on the course. Like if you go to a PGA Tour event, there is literally a leaderboard by everywhere. Every green.
Yeah, and you have those freaking screens everywhere.
A giant digital leaderboard, so they know what's going on. But if you're not going to have that, then the players really need to have their phones. In which case, you can't be like, why? You can't go on the Pro Tour Network app. Like, how are you going to police that?
Well, so, also, in disc golf, so many times, like, it's not that uncommon for a player to run up to check something and run back.
True.
So, like, what's stopping them from, like, running up and seeing where someone's... I mean, on the tee shot, that'd be weird, but yeah. I didn't really see anyone do it. Gannon was just checking where his... Like how close his putt was for the win.
And he also,
the shot was already done.
Yeah, so he also really wasn't doing it for any kind of advantage. You can tell he was just antsy and wanted to see how far.
Yeah, he
just
wanted to know how far of a putt I'm about.
Wasn't
going to
change his strategy at all.
Yeah, like he had already thrown the shot.
Yeah.
It wasn't like.
We'd probably be talking about it more if somebody was doing it and got an advantage from it. We'd probably be like, that might be something to consider.
It would be a lot interesting if Luke had thrown his shot and Gannon was watching where his shot landed to decide how aggressive he was taking his next shot. Like that's a completely different scenario, but like.
Especially, but once again, everybody can do it at this point.
Well, also in disc golf, you've played this course enough that, like, I feel like if Gannon watched Luke throw any shot, you kind of have a rough idea where a shot's going to be, anyways.
Yeah.
Like, it's very rare that DGN, if someone pulled up DGN on their phone, it is going to make or break their decision to be aggressive or lay out.
It was really funny because when he was doing that, the broadcast, like, turned, they mixed the hot mics in. And Terry and Nate were still trying to like talk about it. They're like, no, Gannon, like I think it's like 30 feet, but it was like quiet because they had mixed in the hot mic, so like you could just barely hear them muffled in the background. And it was that was very funny.
It's like they were in the same, they were there just like whispering to Gannon from a distance.
Yeah, it was very weird.
No, it was a very impressive performance from Luke at Waco yet again. With the addition of Lake Waco coming in, I just didn't really think he was gonna have a chance. That's
impressive.
To be fair, it wouldn't have been crazy to say you didn't think Luke was going to have a chance regardless because like he showed up here last year, 2 years ago. I think he came in second. But this year, Lake Waco, watching coverage of it, like watching practice rounds, Luke Humphreys didn't cross my mind as a guy that like this course is good for.
Yeah.
We knew he was good at the beast. He's proven that before, but I mean, he went toe to toe with Gannon all the way down. He held his own out there. I think he ended up shooting, was it a 9-under, 10-under final round? 9-under final round. So, like, very impressive final round. The hot round, I think, was 11 out there. So, he held his own. You do have to feel like that is probably one of the best shots at a win Luke Humphreys will get in his career.
Yeah. I mean, it's been Waco now a couple of times. Luke kind of just hangs around on tour. Usually not a guy you see contending for wins. Anytime you see a player, like you could tell how much it meant to him.
Yeah.
And how bummed out he was when his caddy, dude, his caddy's face, he looked like a ghost when they threw that OB flag up. I wonder if his caddy gave him some kind of read on that, like the disc selection wise or something, like if he knew the course, because man, he looked like he saw a ghost when his head just dropped whenever that OB flag went out. Like they were so bummed. And it's always, you see this story very often in golf. It happens a lot in traditional golf as well, where you have the kind of journeyman pro who hasn't won, seeking that big moment in their career versus a fan favorite, really talented guy who wins all the time. And it's like these two, you got the audience kind of split between, well, we just love Gannon Burr. We want to see Gannon Burr win. And like everybody rooting for kind of the story. And it's awesome. It's really fun to watch. It's always, either way, you know, there's people that'll be happy about it. If Luke wins, like, wow, that's cool. It's awesome that Luke was able to get a win. And if Gannon wins, there's so many people that love watching Gannon Burr play and win. So it's always great to have that kind of matchup going down the stretch.
Oh, yeah. Now, the other player that was obviously in this, Nicholas Antola.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to call it. I think he gets his first. This isn't a hot take by any
means. Bro, does Nicholas Antola round?
Kind of.
He kind of does.
It's how he brings his arm around like that, but his form when he throws does it.
Yeah.
It's like it's a mind trick on you.
I think it tricks me because every time I see him release it straight, I'm like, this guy's insane.
It feels like when he's playing on difficult mode. It feels like he has both his elbows stuck out.
He kind of does. Yeah.
It kind of has that like feeling.
He's got very good
form. But when he like comes back, then from there in, I think.
Yeah. Which is technically all that matters. I think typically people tell you you want to do a motion that's repeatable because it kind of helps your body feel that. But I mean, technically not wrong.
Golf is all about, it's all about what position you hit.
Wrong in disc golf.
It's all about,
no one knows what's right. Yeah.
Well, it's all about ending up in the right position. Like they'll tell you with your golf swing too. It's like, it doesn't really matter how you get there as long as you get to this position before swinging. And that's kind of like with disc golf.
Yeah.
Too.
Like what's his name? Chuck Berry. I'm just kidding.
What?
Just making the joke about that one guy that has the weird swing, and I was just saying a random name.
All right.
That didn't make any sense.
Chuck Berry? Who are you even trying to say?
Are you talking about Charles Barkley?
Yes.
There you go.
That was the joke was I just said another random name that sounded similar.
He's not even a professional golfer.
I know.
He does have a weird swing.
I thought if I said the guy with the weird swing, you guys would just catch on.
That was a stretch. But I did catch on eventually. So
that is, man, Connor. I think we should have like a Connor timeout where if he makes a joke like that, we have to like get him to explain that there's like
it happens every once in a while.
Yeah.
My brain rarely is somebody else's brain where my brain is.
But anyways, I don't think it's a hot take to say he's going to get his first Pro Tour win this year. That's my opinion. That's my take. I'm not going to go as far as with Cole Radalyn where I predicted the month it was going to happen in, but I'm willing to take a bet if anyone wants to bet against it.
He's super. He's
Connor, Chick-fil-A on it?
Nicholas, man, he's on, he is as good as anybody. Yeah. He just hasn't quite been as consistent as you'd like to see, but I would love to see Nicholas Antela like more establish himself as a consistent like top 10 guy who's always challenging because he's very fun to watch. Super good and has a really awesome technical game.
Now, AB, obviously the final round propelled him up the leaderboard a little bit, but yet another very impressive performance. He finished in a tie for fourth with Mason Ford, who also had a great weekend out there. Are we ready to label AB as the guy to beat this year yet, or do we need to see this a few more weeks?
Oh, no, not the guy to beat, but I think he's going to be around this year. I think that's easy to say at this point. I kind of like whether he won or not, I expected him to be around the top of the leaderboard all year just because he kind of was last year for a good portion of the season. He made a lot of a cameos towards the top of the leaderboard. I think he's going to be very dangerous this year. I don't know if he's going to be, other than Calvin Heimberg, nobody just goes week to week. Like, that's just not a thing that happens. And that, that hasn't even happened for him so far this year. But I do expect that he is going to be a guy that we see consistently contending for wins this year. I think he'll get at least one more. I'd say he probably gets one more. I'll say that.
All right. I like that.
I think this week kind of just proved that, like, he's going to hang around.
No, yeah, he's very good. Now, Calvin Heimberg, big storyline, broke.
DNF.
He DNF'd, well, he's never played.
Well, so yeah, DNS, did not start.
Yeah, he dropped from the tournament beforehand. He said, unfortunately, I'll not be playing the first DGPT Plus event at Waco this weekend. I've decided to sit this weekend out due to a lingering elbow injury.
Connor.
Oh, what up? Did he throw more than 5 forehands?
I don't know.
Dude, I'll tell you right now, if Calvin Heimberg goes down with an elbow injury, I might stop watching disc golf, man. All these injuries, it's disgusting.
Yeah,
The words lingering and elbow in front of injury is basically like the scariest thing you can hear in any kind of arm-related sport. Like, it basically, it's like, this is the end.
It's basically death, murder, kill.
It's not good.
We've seen this
lingering
coming up with, I mean, we have Paul still kind of questionable performance-wise with his shoulder.
It's
injury.
A hospital out
we
there.
We have Eagle McMahon recovering from surgery from an elbow. We had Simon Lazat with an injury. Now we have Calvin Heimberg, like, and obviously Ricky with lines, but a lot of the like use injuries, right, where it's coming from either overuse or something weird happening with the form. How are we not seeing more of this in the past? Is it just because courses are getting longer?
Yeah, I think, yes.
And then B.
Totally.
Like,
is.
It's a. I'm hoping this is a wake up call. I'm not saying that these guys aren't doing this, but I'm hoping it's a wake up call for the rest of the field of like, as much disc golf as I'm going to play in the off season, I need to be spending an equal amount of time with a like personal trainer, physical therapist, like something.
They got to start treating
Chris
themselves
Tatar,
like
I forgot, also had the elbow injury and surgery.
Well, here's the thing about the injuries. We've talked a lot about players in this technology era where like we might get more data on throwing, like how that's going to change the way they play. One thing that a lot of players are going to start having to consider is how can they throw to preserve their body? Like, rather than how can I throw to gain more distance? How can they're going to start thinking about what am I doing? And we've seen Simon kind of do that in the past. But like, what am I going to do with my game and my throwing motion to protect my body? Because that's something in baseball that's a very big trend with pitchers, is like changing the way that they throw. Sometimes you'll see pitchers completely change to like a submarine style just because they had elbow issues in the past. I think that is going to become a trend because like there are just some guys who have form that is probably just harder on their elbow. The elbow is that key joint that just gets crushed. And you said it, the courses are longer. They play every single day, and every time they get to one of these tour stops, they're faced with just long throw after long throw after long throw. It's different than it used to be. It's not like they're showing up these par three courses and chipping 300-foot hyzers anymore. They're just laying out bomb drives everywhere. Yeah. I think you're going to see players play less practice rounds, potentially ease off of that. And yeah, I mean, it's demanding.
To me, I think a key that we haven't seen in disc golf yet that we see in a lot of other sports is the way you practice in the off season. Because right now your off season practice is field work, go out to a court. Like it all involves a lot of throwing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whereas like if you're a pitcher, your off season isn't, I don't know much about baseball, but I'd be shocked if your off season consisted of trying to throw as fast of a fastball all off season as you could. Certainly because not. Your arm just has a clock on it. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. There's a reason they have like, they have a pitch count, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
Where like they don't let them above a certain amount to preserve their arm. Well, explain that to me.
Well, yeah, every
I understand. Explain it to Connor.
Yeah, I don't understand.
The coaches will track the amount of pitches.
Is that like per game?
There's not like a limit necessarily. But like
the coach will kind of limit.
But they keep that in mind. And then there's sometimes if a pitcher is, you know, if you're getting towards the end of the season and you're not going to make the playoffs and your pitcher is just a little fatigued, they'll shut guys down for the year as well. But yeah, off season for like baseball pitchers, they'll throw bullpens. They'll have like sessions where they go out and throw. But yeah, a big part of it is recovery. And if you look at like little league baseball for the young guys, they actually have real limits. If you throw a certain amount of pitches, you can't pitch the next like for a couple of days. I think even just in like youth baseball growing up, we had things like that. You're right. Because
like in disc golf, you'll literally hear pros say, I got to throw as far as I can because I went to the field and threw as hard as I could day after day after day after day. It's like,
it's true.
That's not good on
your
body.
The more people get injured, the more it's going to become a trend. I mean, hey, if you're somebody like Seth Muncy, it's good for business, I guess.
It's great for business if you're Seth Muncy. Yeah, because like the off season, if I'm a pro, I need to figure out how can I improve my disc golf game, improve my body's ability to throw consistently, and improve my body's endurance out there without playing disc golf in the off season. Like how can I keep my putting skills sharp, keep my like timing and stuff sharp in the gym?
Yeah.
Like how can I do that off the course where it's a, you know, very, I'm not getting injured with these like movements, very like I'm strengthening everything through it so that when the tour comes, I have like a month of ramp back up to throwing and then I'm ready to rock and roll for the tour.
It's totally like the intentionality of it. Like I think it's just the difference between, and there's probably already pros that do this. I'm not saying there isn't.
No, absolutely.
It's totally the idea of just like, I'm gonna have these many days this week where I only do short game stuff. Then 2 days out of the week, I'm gonna throw full power shots and play. Like I think a lot of guys, and this is the, I'll tell anybody that one of the quickest ways to get good at disc golf is to just go out and play.
Yeah.
You know, play tough courses, throw a lot of shots. But I think a lot of guys, that's kind of their routine. And certainly throughout the season, that's the routine because they just show up to the next course. They're playing another practice round.
And practice rounds is the way to learn the course. They throw five or six tee shots.
Exactly.
A time.
That is so demanding on your arm. And yeah, I think you're going to probably have to see more guys and girls be more intentional with like, okay, I'm only going to throw full power on these days. Like I'm going to try to save what I've got in the tank a little more because we kind of have always thought disc golfers were invincible, but these last few years have shown us that they are not. And a lot of our big players are getting hurt, which kind of tells you that the ones that practice the most are getting hurt.
They're having to push themselves harder and harder and harder because the field is getting harder and harder.
It's
harder.
True.
So they're having to throw crazier shots. Yeah. They're having to throw further.
Yeah. No, it's definitely a storyline to pay attention to just because.
And it just stinks. Like, imagine if Gannon Burr next tournament picks up an injury and he's out for like 3 months. Like, that just is a bummer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And now, to be clear, we're not saying that the players who are injured aren't already doing a lot of this stuff in the offseason because like NBA players injuries get still injured happen. All the time. Like every professional sport that like takes things that have this stuff down to a science, you're still going to get injured.
More
like,
so, injuries do happen. More so saying if you're one of the guys that's still healthy, you're probably just thinking to yourself like, oh my gosh, like am I next? Like you got to start thinking about that.
It's just like the landscape of disc golf's changing a lot to where like now a lot of these pros do have enough money to think about having a personal trainer in the off season. Mm-hmm. Whereas like before it was like, do I have a personal trainer or do I get to fully grocery shop this off season? Like those are like, that's not the choice anymore for a lot of guys. You
get an insurance plan on your body parts.
And you can also insure your arm.
You know, there's this whole story in golf. This guy, Anthony Kim, he actually recently just made his comeback on the LIV tour. But he had an insurance policy on his body because he was an up-and-coming, like, he was, like, the next Tiger Woods guy. And he got hurt. And in order to get the money, which was, like, I want to say, people were speculating it was, like, upwards of $100 million. Like, a ton of money. Because he was, his career was worth a lot.
Yeah.
He had to not play in order to make that. Like, maybe longer than he would have sat out. And that kind of, like, set back his whole career.
Wow.
But he cashed this huge insurance check.
Kind of worth it.
Who's,
a little bit, kind of.
He made it back.
I have to sit on the couch to get $100 million? Oh!
Man. I love golf so much, though. What am I going to do?
It is a little tougher in golf because, like, that money's out there.
True.
Yeah.
It's a little different than like disc golf. It's like, oh, I'm not going to win 12 grand this weekend.
The insurance policy was based off of what he could have made in that time.
That is a good point.
But it was guaranteed this
But way. It is guaranteed. You just have, and you don't have to practice.
Sounds like a pretty dope contract.
Yeah, that's good.
Listen, man.
Where do I sign?
That's good stuff.
I wonder what my arm's worth.
Call that a couch potato contract.
What your arm's worth?
Yeah. That should be a punishment to have to go to an insurance agent and try to get our arm insured.
Well, at the end of the day, you have a pretty low risk of arm injury and you are going to pay the insurance company.
Yeah.
So like, they might quote you something pretty good, but you're going to have to pay them every month for it.
I know. It'd just be funny to like, sit down with an insurance agent and...
I don't know if anybody would sell me this policy, but I could totally argue that like a very heavy portion of my yearly salary at this company is... depended on my right arm being able to function.
It is all dependent on your performance on the course.
Like I've got. Well, I'm just saying. Like if
you suck, we will not make content.
If Hunter cut my pay a lot last week,
I saw what happened in Course Conquest, I was like, Connor, man.
If I broke my right arm, like it would suck.
I'm so glad I'm not a professional disc golfer.
Imagine having to be good at disc golf to make money, man.
Well, the thing is that I actually went to an insurance agent. And I was like, I'd like to insure my right arm. He's like, we can't do that because we saw the MythBusters video. We know if your right arm goes, you're better with your left.
It's true.
Yeah,
it's true.
They were actually going to pay Connor not to insure his arm.
That'd be a sick
should I throw a couple lefty shots just to, you know, I'm. What if I ace lefty?
That'd be sick. That would be sick.
That would be sick.
The final storyline. Final storyline I want to cover from Waco here is some notably bad performances. We'll call it. First off, Matty O.
Negative.
Last cash, Matty O.
Buddy cash, 45th.
Though. 45th.
A buddy cash, though.
How much was the, how many cashes?
$400.
That's nice.
Not bad.
No, yeah. I've had worse weekends on disc golf.
What did Mason Ford cash by getting that solo fourth? Because he made like a big.
He tied for fourth.
He didn't get the solo fourth? No, did he bogey 18?
I don't know what happened. AB tied.
He must have bogeyed 18.
$2,900.
That's good.
You got me good there, Hunter. I don't know why. I've done worse on a disc golf course.
Missing the cut. We have Isaac Robinson. I believe one. Either you or I had him in our top three. Or no, maybe Joe picked him to win. I think Joe picked him to win.
Come on, Joe.
No. I don't know. 47th place for Isaac Robinson.
Not in my top three because I had Simon and AB.
Brody Smith missed the cut. But he had fun. Brody's passion's back. Also, he played
hecka good.
I have heard from a confirmed source, there was a lot of people out there that were questioning, would Brody do it? He did call Cupcake on a time violation.
Yes.
I have heard that. So there was a lot of speculation that Brody wouldn't have the stones to do it. Apparently, he did.
I'm going
to
tell you
and apparently, it went over okay.
Well, here's something I will tell you is if you say to Brody, I bet you won't do this, as long as it's within the realm of... like anything a person would do, he probably will do it.
Yeah.
Also,
Brody's not afraid to do anything.
No. Especially when it relates to just a mildly uncomfortable social situation.
Oh, no.
He's not even a chance.
Yeah.
He's going to do it.
Kevin Jones missed the cut. Tristan Tanner missed the cut. Silas Schultz missed the cut. Paul McBeth missed the cut.
Schultz kind of started out pretty well.
Yeah.
What the heck?
Colton Montgomery, Gavin Babcock.
Not C. Monty.
Yeah. Simon Lizotte, the Crame Dog.
Oh.
My dark horse pick, Drew Gibson.
Dang it. Oh, yeah.
Nico LaCastro.
Dude, this cut eight people up. I'm telling you right now.
Anthony Bedanza, Eric Oakley.
Bedanza held his own, though. I mean,
he was out there. He played.
I think he averaged like in the 980s or 990.
He beat Jared Stoll, who Bomb City Stole, got the Eagle on 17. I'm reading the list behind, below him.
Who else he beat?
GT Hancock, Carter Ahrens, Max Reading, Micah Groff.
Aiden Scott is
Austin Hanum.
Third on the Scott Smith list.
Did you see, A, he's on Prodigy's core team. B, he wore Pit Vipers for the photo shoot.
Oh, come on.
Does that bump him up?
Were they gooders?
It's Evan Smith, Evan Scott, Aiden Scott.
Yeah.
I think.
Micah Groff, also up-and-comer, Austin Hanum, Eric Oakley, Trevin Crowe.
Are we going to call Carter Ahrens a bust?
Not yet.
Okay, we'll give him one more week?
Sure.
I think that's funny. Let's just put him on notice.
Oh, Evan Scott, 83rd. For no reason. Was he the worst, the second best?
No, Evan Smith did better. He came in like 40th.
Evan Smith's the best, Evan?
Yes, and he's the best,
47th, Evan. He came in.
Is Brody Smith on your Scott list?
How did Aiden
list?
Scott make your Evan list?
Okay. Huh? Because it's Evan Smith, Evan Scott... Aiden Scott. So it's the Evan Scott list.
It's a list of Evans.
All basically the same.
I think it's a list
Evans. It's Evans and Scotts.
It's very Chuck Berry, Charles Barkley.
It's kind of like when they do Blake of the Year. And
that's
they,
what I was going to say. It's just Evans.
Brooks.
Yeah, it's just Evans.
Yeah.
All right. And last but certainly not least, to wrap up the show before we get into Trevor's trivia. Well, to wrap up the Waco show.
I was about to say, I'm wrapping up the show this week.
You are.
That's fun. Well, not technically.
Silas Selection. We have the Manufacturer Cup update.
Let's go. Do you have a website?
No. He emailed it to me. First off, he corrected everything that he had the sponsorships incorrect.
I haven't seen this yet. This is very cool.
He had the sponsorships incorrect previously on a few players. So thank y'all for letting us know in the comments. So he corrected that. But
come on, Ed.
Discmania had the most players in the top 10 this week with four players coming to the top 10. They also had the highest weekly score coming in at 46.5, driven by the entire quote-unquote Sky team being in the top 10 for both events 2024.
Yeah, dude, because Kyle Klein was going off too.
Yeah. Innova scored their first points of the season, gained them on the board with... Funny enough, Barsby and Sexton leading the charge. That Joel Freeman also got in there.
That's a retirement home.
MVP, DGA, and Lone Star still have 0 points right now at this point in the season. But Discmania takes the lead this week. Now they have 69.5 points on the season. Discraft's in second at 60 points. Prodigy's in third at 26.5. That's your top three. Discmania was led by Gannon Burr earning 25 points in first. Niklas Antila getting 16.5 with his tie for second. Then you had Kyle Klein scoring 4 points. And I forget who came in 10th. There's five people tied for 10th, but someone for Discmania earning 1 point there. So Discmania, team to beat right now at nearing 70 events through 70 points through two events. Discraft and Discmania.
Oh, it's Casey White.
Casey White is top. That's it.
Yeah.
Discmania and Discraft have a chokehold on. Now this is MPO only. They have a chokehold on the rest of the field right now. About a 35 point drop off to Prodigy coming in next. So we'll see how the rest.
Prodigy can climb back in there.
MVP, you get Simon and Eagle going to the right event. They could.
They're gonna need like them to get a bunch of wins.
They're already 70 points behind right now. It's gonna take quite a bit to climb back in.
Discraft is like the preseason favorite.
They were so for Discmania to be upset. Have a 9.5 point lead on them through two events is definitely impressive. But
upset.
All right, time for the fan favorite segment, Trevor's Trivia.
What up, dogs?
Hit him with the Trev.
Okay, I got something kind of fun. I think this time
a phone. Connor, time out.
No, Trevor laughed. There wasn't silence following.
I basically have
maybe
here.
That'll be your timeout. If you say a bad joke, we just go quiet for 5 seconds.
That's the worst. That's actually the worst.
I have a list here of the top 50 best-selling discs since
this is fun,
March of 2023, and this is from, I'm just going to say, a very large retailer. That's all I'm going to say.
You so pulled it off our site.
No. not off of our site. That's why I didn't name drop it. But I'm just saying, just know that this is a pretty good data sample because it's from a very large retailer.
Okay.
This is from March of last year?
From March of last year on to up to now.
So year.
So yeah, basically the last year.
A year of data. Okay.
And so the way this game works is you each get five guesses.
Five.
To just guess anyone on the list, and you just get 1 point if it's on the list. You get no points if it's on. You're going to go back and forth and see who can win.
This is the top 50?
This is the 50 best-selling.
And you just get a point if it's on the list.
That's right.
Oh, okay. And we go back and forth for how many guesses,
Five each.
I was trying to come up with my math of what guesses I want to do. Okay.
Five each. Okay. And I think some of this list is predictable. Some of it is not at all.
Yeah.
Connor, you want to go first or second?
Yeah, I'll go first.
I want to... Yeah. Okay. Go ahead.
I'll go... Now, what is most popular? Does that mean the most sold?
Yeah.
That makes best what selling. I'm about to say. I'm going to go with a zone.
A zone is on the list.
Okay. Buzz.
A buzz is also on the list.
This is sketchy because I know not everybody got a ton of them. I'll go Hex.
Hex is on the list.
Destroyer.
Destroyer is also on the list, too, too.
Okay. I'm going to go...
I'm going to change it. We're going to go 10 guesses each. Because I think gosh. 5 could be too easy.
10 is
We're
a lot. 10 each. 10 is a lot. Okay, I will go with so 5 too easy.
10 will be hard.
Mm.
2-2 so far.
May I ask a question that could be pertinent to both of us?
Yeah.
Does it separate out if a player does like a signature run or anything?
No.
And so they're all just...
Yeah, that's all these molds are stock.
Okay.
Every single mold on here is... If a disc is, yeah, I'll say this because there's multiple. If a disc is stock but technically a part of a player line, then that still counts.
Yeah,
but
okay.
they're stock. They're not like a that's, special yeah. run of a disc.
But that's what I'm asking about special runs.
No special runs on here. There's no special okay. runs.
I'm going to go with a Luna.
A Luna is on the list. 3-2.
My brain's falling apart now, though. I forgot what Frisbees are.
AVR.
AVR is on the list. 3-3.
Okay. Woohoo. I'll go with a Firebird.
Firebird is on the list. 4-3.
Gosh.
Woo! I'll go Zeus.
I'm so scared.
Zeus is not on what? The list.
Okay. All right. The ice has been broken.
I don't know. We got 10 guesses each.
How many
well, you guys have done 4 guesses.
Oh
each.
My gosh.
It is
I
four
can't
to
think
three
of that
right
many
now.
More days. The pressure is uncanny.
I lost this early. that's just disgusting.
You didn't lose yet because I'm. You don't understand.
The all list the gets kind of tricky.
All the rest of mine are going to be stupid.
We haven't even named a lot of the which should be like 1 through 8. We've only named like 2 of the top 10 probably.
I don't know. Some of these surprised me.
I'm going to go with, I really want to get a trilogy, something like that. I'm really scared too.
You got like probably 2 out of 30 molds to get
I
there.
I know. I guess I'll go with a.
And this is through. When was this? What you're pulling through?
This is up to recent. Like it's real time updated.
Okay.
Passion.
Passion is not on the list.
Okay. Yeah, passion. I don't think they made enough of last year. Okay. Unfortunately,
I wasn't sure. Semi popular.
Envy is on the list. 4-4.
Oh, that's a good one, Hunter. Great
through
job.
5 guesses, it is 4-4. Guess number 6.
You already said buzz. I'll go with a... Toro?
Toro is not on the list.
Yeah, I didn't think so.
Decent Brock. Guess. Rock is not on
yeah,
the list.
Yeah, I was scared. I didn't want to be hurt by that one. That's why I didn't
say
it.
Well, I just normally Destroyer is like the second on these lists. So
very surprising that it's not on this list. Yeah, through 6 guesses, still 4-4. 4 guesses each.
That was my 5th guess.
I'm just started thinking.
I'm
like,
counting.
What's in a lot of people's bags?
Because it was 4-3, and then you tied up at 4-4, and then you just guessed again.
Oh, I'm just going to throw Raider out there.
Raider is not on the list.
Yeah, I figured. At this point, I just
what are my guesses?
Say plastic.
Okay, well, last year the Royal line came out, but I don't know if anyone had enough of it because they just came out with it once and then like it. I don't think the Raptor's been guessed. I'm going to go Raptor.
Raptor is not on the list.
Daggum.
On to guess number 7.
Can I go with a... Would that include a Captain's Raptor?
Well, they're different molds.
So I'm going to say Captain's Raptor.
Not on the list.
I felt like maybe just like the push of them. I don't know.
No, that was a good guess.
The tough part is MVP would cover this list.
I know.
If their inventory, but it depends on who it was. Because depending on the manufacturer or depending on the retailer, some retailers did have enough MVP for this to cover the list.
But like, even then, though.
Because, like, we hit the Hex, but, like, everyone had Hexes, the Envy, because, like, the Lizottles were all last year. So, yeah. If the Lizottles are in the Envy, I chose because the Rebirth.
Yeah.
But, like, was the Pixel hot enough to get onto this list. If the Raptors are going to make the list, then surely they sold more pixels than Raptors. Surely they sold more pixels than rocks, and that's on the list. What did they sell more than? Oh, the Wraith.
The Wraith is on the list.
Yeah.
Nice.
Okay, on to guess 8. 5-4, Hunter.
I'm going to go with, I mean, just a starter. I'm going to go Leopard.
Leopard is on the list. Okay. 5-5.
I want the Valkyrie.
The Valkyrie is also on the list.
Yeah. What?
I think I know which retailer.
6-5, and we are on to guess 9. 2 more guesses each. 6-5, Hunter.
Then I will go with the... Let's keep in that realm, but what else is there for me though? I'm gonna go with a nuke.
Nuke is not on the list. So Hunter can win if he gets one right here.
Give me the Venom.
The Venom is not on the list.
It came out last year. It was really popular with us.
Connor,
I thought it might have been
our last guess. Chance. This is your last guess. You got a chance here to tie it up. That's a nail biter.
Goodness. Okay, I'm gonna go. Vulture
is not on the list.
Yeah,
and then I'll go.
I'm very surprised.
I can't wait to hear the ones that we
name
didn't get.
A certain disc. It's like it was the top seller. I'm pretty sure.
Oh, last year.
Yeah.
Zone OS.
No.
Well, was that on the list? I have one more guess.
That's on the list.
The Zone OS wasn't on the list. One. It came out last year, didn't it?
So it's
one,
definitely an innovative.
The one that I'm very surprised. Retailer. It is pretty innovative, heady, but no, you said the glitch. I think that was the top seller.
Oh, okay. Again, MVP, you don't know how much inventory someone has.
Well, I said it was a very large retailer, which I think you probably could insinuate who I was talking about. Mm-hmm. But Glitch was on here. Sun Proxy King. Was on here. But there were weird ones, like the River was on this list.
I thought about saying Rolo. That, but I didn't think it was popular anymore.
Oh, I bet this list is...
The Wizard
this list
was on
is probably
there.
Dummy rigged.
The Wizard is on
Because I bet
on
like the freaking... what's their molds?
I took all their molds out.
But then you don't have 50.
Well, yeah, there was a couple of... There was a few of their molds.
Yeah, but because they're dummy high.
Some of them are. Yeah. Yeah, some of them are.
I thought about
that
saying
the
Wizard.
Rock out that bumped the Raptor out.
No, there's still a ton. There's still a lot of interesting ones on there, like Mako 3.
I thought about saying Mako 3 too.
But Pixel was on there.
I was scared of the Pixel. I wasn't too scared of the time lapse, but I was scared of the Pixel.
Mako 3, but no Rock.
Crazy.
Yeah, Mako 3 sell a lot. They're good discs.
You got to remember the beginner market. The beginner market is so powerful.
No, you're right. You're right.
It's a fascinating.
That's why I went with Leopard.
Yeah, but our list would look a lot different. I think.
Oh yeah.
Way oh different. Yeah. That was the problem. Was I was thinking about that.
Yeah.
Well, beginner. It depends on what you describe as a beginner list, because like true beginners right now, they're into getting like really into the sport, or all they're not going to Innova.
It's also true.
True.
Well, the Diamond was very high on this list as well.
Yeah, Diamond. Yeah. But I'm saying like you
Pure was hitting, on this list.
Was the Soul on the list?
Was not. PA 3 was on the list.
Wow.
PA 3 kind of surprised me.
Yeah.
PA 3 doesn't surprise me.
It's just it should be on the list.
I think
like
every Prodigy player is putting
the
those.
PA 3 should be on everyone's list. Let's be clear about that.
I'm clear. Clariton.
Doesn't mean it doesn't
not
prior.
A sponsor.
Clariton. All right, let's get the style of selection going.
I already have my choice. May I go?
Yeah.
Mine is a Clash Frisbees Ginger.
Nice. Good Thank guess. You.
I am going to go with a... Ballista Pro.
I want the Psychic from Elevation.
Wow.
I don't know. I think it
I'm
could be something.
I'm scared. Every time.
It was a Robbie C. pig.
Oh my gosh. Of course
pig.
It was.
Oink, oink, dude.
Is that a pig or an owl?
That's a good point.
Good point.
That's a good point. Too bad none of us guessed owl.
Well, why does anyone make an owl? Is that a disc?
We should make an owl.
Who makes the owl?
I could find owl. PJ approved.
Who makes the owl?
It's probably one of those companies that has all the animal themed discs.
You?
Isn't there a company that has like all animal themed ones? Let's see. Owl. Does it exist? Does
That's
it
an Innova?
Oh. No, you've got the Great Horned Owl from Daredevil discs. Oh. And then there's the Howler and the Growler and the Prowler, but no owl.
No
I'm
owl.
I'm gonna make a company
you can
called
call me
Dog.
Owl.
I'm gonna make a company called Dog Discs, and you're gonna have like
Dirty
the
Dog
poodle.
Discs.
Like they're all like just like dog
the mutt.
This is the Berna doodle.
Nice.
They're all doodles.
They're all doodles.
Doodle disc golf. All right. Well, by the time you guys are
doodle
listening to this
too.
Episode, yeah, I'll probably
well,
still be attempting.
So tired. You just aced hole 3 within the last few hours, Connor.
I did.
Of people listening to this. Okay. So how do you feel right now?
I just feel great. I feel a little cold.
Well, how is acing hole three? Because we haven't done the challenge yet, obviously. How is acing hole three going to make you feel?
Acing hole three is going to make me... Here's the thing.
Uh-oh.
I'm going to celebrate a lot, but like uh-oh. Also at the same time, it's not hard. So I can't tell how it's going to make
me
feel.
You've tried for 10 hours. Can you say it's not hard?
It's hard for you.
Yeah.
It's not... That makes you feel worse.
if you've tried something for over 10 hours and you haven't done it, you can't say it's not hard.
Have you ever heard of the rule of 100 hours says that if you do something for 100 hours in a year, you're better than 95% of the world at
so
that
So you'll
thing.
Be an expert so if you, at not acing hole
if you
three.
Get to 100 hours... yeah, that's what I'm saying. You'll be better.
I know exactly how not to do it.
No, with 100 zones, you're finally going to be throwing the hyzer line into the straight.
I feel good about
it.
No, the fact
that
I have
that 30 mile an hour wind's going to come off there and take it all the way to the other side of
the
park.
But the fact that I can throw the same disc over and over again instead of having to throw a zone and then a whammo fairway driver, and then
it's going to be like much easier.
I'm not even. I think
10 minutes.
I'm coming up with contingency plans of like how do we make this stream still worth watching?
Yeah, it's probably going to be boring.
Connor's going to get it in the first like 20 tries.
Well, I'm going to throw one set all lefty.
No,
I'm just kidding.
My plan is
but I'll throw a couple.
You're probably going to ace it within the first hour. Okay. Is what I'm thinking. And so then Trevor and I will have to ace it too.
Oh.
That's what I'm thinking. Is if you ace it where the stream hasn't been going on for long enough, we'll just all three have to ace it. Like if we've only been live for like 20 minutes and you ace it, we can't just end the stream.
I'd say the last an hour, that's fair. But
if it's over an hour, we're golden.
If it's like, oh, we're only a half hour in.
That's what I'm saying. If it like just started.
We might be here until 8 o'clock tonight. Never know. No, I got plans to work on my truck after work, so like I gotta be done at 3, you know?
I did title the thing, Connor will ace hole 3
tonight. Yeah, I know. I will ace it. I'm just gonna ace it before 3 o'clock.
Yeah, no, absolutely. In my head, we're back here before, like, we might still be able to film this afternoon.
Yeah.
That's where my head's at.
Dang.
Yeah, I think you're going to get it easy.
Dude.
So, well, hey, hopefully you tuned in. And if we're still live right now, you know we're all crazy. If you still see a little live button next to the foundation, go give Connor some encouragement.
Thank you.
Tune in, Connor's like passed out.
I might be.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase. It's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.